It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 4th of July, 2023. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza. It is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Only it's about, 5:41 right now. I got a little late start. And 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe around, and whatever time it is when you listen to the podcast. If you're listening to the podcast, first of all, thank you very, very much. If you're new to the program, I hope you'll enjoy it and stick with it. And, well, I remember eons ago, fat, dead Rush Limbaugh, the Pineapple Prince, said, my friends, if you'll stay with the program for about 6 weeks, I think you'll get stuck. And you'll learn a lot. Well, he was a liar. But in this case, if you're new to the program, well, I'm just awfully glad to have you along and part of the conversation in whatever manner you may choose. And, well, it really is a special kind of conversation that's been going on for, goodness gracious, almost 20 years. How about that? Hi, I'm Robin. And if you pop in, you're listening now, and you pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, you'll be greeted, well, not exactly by the early arrivers, because, well, like I said, I'm late. But you'll be greeted by Theo and Squeaky and Anatole, who are there hanging out in the chat room. Hey, y'all. Thank you very kindly to Theo for the welcome back. I appreciate it. And you'll be capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. And with it being summer and everything, I'm sure Roger is very, very busy these days with things relating to his garden and to canning and kraut making and jelly and jam making and all sorts of delicious stuff. So do come by. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. Because y'all are the only reason this program continues to exist, and for which I am extremely grateful. And as a consequence of that, we say thank you to our fourth, third, second, and first day of July subscribers. And working backwards, what that means is we say thank you to Kim and Malin in New Jersey, and thank you to Thomas. Thank you, Thomas, very kindly. Thank you to Paul. Thanks as well. I'm just working through the list here because I haven't been here for a couple of days. Thank you to Paul, and thank you to Dave and the Blind. And thank you for following up Cynthia, our pal Cynthia in the Bay Area, who jumped in on the challenge from last week. Thank you so much. Thanks as well to Bill in Allentown and to Gene and Ann across the pond. Thank you, John. Thanks as well to Mark. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to Tom in sunny San Rafael. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you to David in Oregon. Thank you. And so thanks entirely for being partial sponsors of the program. Now, here's where we stand. We finished the month of June in a $1,000 hole, just trying to keep this program on the air. Fortunately, we have a chance to, and of course, we begin a new month. Yesterday would have been the first broadcast day of the month, but I wasn't able to be here, so that doesn't count. So this is the first broadcast day of the month of July. And that brings with it a brand new month worth of fundraising opportunities or necessities. So the fundraising goal stands at $1,300. We can, however, reduce it to $7 with Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge, which begins with the first broadcast day of, well, every month, and in which dear friends of the program, namely Ralphs and Chris in Germany, and an anonymous friend, put forward the requisite funds to match $300 if we can raise the $300. So that's where we are. We need to raise $300 this evening. That'll get us down to $700 to go. We don't have to stop at $300. If we could, if we could raise the whole $13, that would be, well, a 4th of July miracle. I dare say I am probably the only talk program that is live on this day. I don't know that for a fact, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't the case. But I wanted, you know, and so let me get caught up and explain my whereabouts. On Saturday, let's put it this way. Berg and his beloved and I went down to Tennistan. And it was with some trepidation because Tennistan is a hard place, difficult place, because of the awfulness of the government of Tennistan. It's a bad place for me to be. Their government is not welcoming of or accepting of the LGBTQ plus community. But it was a necessity to go. My son and my daughter-in-law are moving down there. And so we had to get the place they're moving to. They've got a little house on a patch of ground. And we had to do things to get it in shipshape order so that my two beautiful granddaughters can live down there. And I'm happy to report it's a beautiful community. Lovely little house, beautiful yard, and it's not too far south of Bristol, Tennessee. Bristol, of course, is Bristol's a city and a town in Tennessee and a town in Virginia, and the state line between the two states crosses right through the town. And there was a lot to do. There were, my daughter-in-law and I have returned here, and it was so good to see the babies again because they didn't go with us. And as a consequence, it's a matter of lonesomeness, because those little girls are just wonderful. I got back, and it felt like the June bug had grown several inches in the couple of days that we were gone. I feel like I've been gone for eons, frankly, but it's only been a couple of days. I'd planned on being on air yesterday, but it was getting the utilities turned on was a little bit more complicated than expected. But the gas and the water and the electric are on there. Ferg stayed behind. He's going to continue to work on cleaning the house, and you know, because it's been shut up for a while. And you know how shut up houses get. So I spent 2 days down in Tennistan instead of one. And here's the interesting thing to report. I had a perfectly lovely time. It wasn't quite as comfortable as being at home, but nowhere ever is as comfortable as being at home. But I moved freely around and about and through the stores and getting things to set up housekeeping and the like. And running them around. And people were nice. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Glad to see you, ma'am. Just wonderful. There were a couple of moments, though. And they gave me... they gave me a bit of a giggle. One happened yesterday evening. I was at the end of my day, and the little no-tell motel that I was staying at wasn't terribly far from a shopping area. And so I wanted just something to end the day, just a little nosh. And so I popped into their local Outback, the restaurant, not the Subaru. And everything was completely uneventful until, and when I was telling Annette about this, I said, you know, maybe Ron DeSantis is right, which is not a phrase I ever want to hear myself say again, but it was funny. I went to the restroom, and as I was washing my hands and retouching, touching up my lipstick, a guy walked into the ladies' room. And so, you know, I've washed my hands and everything, and I'm sitting there, you know, trying not to draw Chinese curses on my face with lipstick. And I about did, because he came through the door, and I looked to my right over to him, and he looked at me, and I went, huh! And he went, huh! And turned around and zoomed out of the restroom. Now, being an Outback, they can't just say ladies and gentlemen on the door, or men and women, or even just wash your hands. Nah, it's Outback, and so it's got a kitschy Australian theme. And so on the men's room door is the word blokes, and on the ladies' room door is the word Shayla's. Now, I, of course, know the difference between a bloke and a Sheila, and a Sheila. I don't know if this guy didn't know the difference, or if he was just, maybe he had a couple too many, or... But it is a jarring thing to see a cis dude walk into the ladies' room. And it was apparently as jarring to him as it was to me. It reminded me immediately of an old Gary Larson Far Side cartoon. The cartoon depicts a Western scene at night, and a couple of cowboys they've got their bedrolls rolled out and their fires there, and the one cowboy's like huddled up, crawling away from his sleeping bag. And there's a little dude down in the end of the sleeping bag, and his buddy, the cowboy's buddy, looks at him and goes, "No, Zeke, that ain't no scorpion. That there is one of them Mexican mariachi players. And like as not, he's as scared of you as you are of him." You can probably figure out why it was that I flashed on that in that moment, but... It's just like, only, you know, because the restaurant was practically empty. It was closing time. And, you know, I didn't have some great big whopping steak or anything. All I had was a little plate of thinly sliced, seared ahi rare tuna and water, ice water with lemon and Splenda. But I just, you know, needed to touch up, powder my nose. And seeing that guy come through, and lo and behold, men and women's only spaces. Whatever shall we do? So that was silly thing number one. Silly thing number two happened this morning. Near the house where the kids were, there's a McDonald's and a convenience store. The convenience store I'd been to several times. And since Ferg is cleaning out the refrigerator, the perishables are in an ice chest right now. So I stopped to get a couple of large bags of ice. 16-pounders. Well, I'd gotten up this morning and gotten prepared to face the day, or prepared my face for the day. T.S. Eliot and the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock says, "And we shall prepare a face to meet the faces that we meet," and that's what I had done. And I walked through the door into that convenience store and found it chock full of Amish or Mennonites or something. You know, the dudes had the grody Abraham Lincoln beard, you know, nothing above the chin, no mustache, nothing on the neck below. It was an Abe Lincoln beard. And their galluses and their trousers and their white or chambray blue shirts, and those poor women, those poor, poor old women, done up all up in black with a little white piece of headgear on so that God won't get mad at them for showing their hair. Honest to Pete. It's just a question. Is a deity that spends any effort whatsoever thinking about women's hair really a deity worth worshiping? Really? Is it? Because I don't think it is. And those fuckers stared me down. They weren't staring at the Tran. They were staring at the heathen woman with her hair uncovered and going to hell for it. So I just sashayed past and said, "Morning, fellas." And they scowled. Oh, they scowled their manly scowl. They scowled their, oh, so pious Christian scowls. If they could have cut my head off, they would have. But that's not legal in the new 90 states of America, at least yet. Give the maggots a couple of more years. They're working on it. So weird. And the women were scowling, and the men were scowling, because it was the scowl of their approbation. So I bought my ice, walked out the door, went over to the freezer where the ice was, opened it up, got my two bags out, and lo and behold, one of the Mennonite dudes, because, you know, they weren't there in a buggy. They had Kentucky plates. They were driving an automobile. I think it was a Kia something or other. And that fucker had followed me out the door staring at me. But he still didn't have the courage to speak to me. So I just grabbed my bags of ice and turned around and said, bye now. And sashayed away. I might have put a little extra wiggle in my walk just for good measure, but yeah, whatever. As I've said a million times before, and it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, it's Tuesday. But, you know, George Carlin used to say that religion is like a lift in your shoes. It's fine if you need one, but don't go trying to nail lifts onto the feet of the natives. And it just... It's not the fact that people engage in religion. I guess from the moment that we figured out that we were, or developed some sense of higher cognitive intellect, well, probably the first person to, you know, the first time Og had a dream and told Mog and Nog about it, that's probably where religion came from. Og have vision in Og sleep. Og tell you vision. You follow Og. You do what Og say. And we know for a fact that the first deities were not masculine. Because the first representation of deities that I think exist in the archaeological record, somebody like our friend Dr. John out in New Mexico could correct me if I'm wrong, but they are all manifestations of the female. And quite often what we think, you know, probably serve some ritual purpose. She's plump, and she is broadly pregnant, wide hips, big breasts, big pendulous breasts, and generally speaking, hasn't much of a face to take note of. But that goes back to the Neolithic. So I guess human beings have some need to believe in something. And making up an imaginary friend seems to meet that particular need. Now, me being a modern human, I don't have a particular need for a sky daddy. Daddy. Get along quite nicely with that, thank you. But other people do. But it's not the faith itself. It's the fundamentalism. It's the idea that we can't live with modernity, so we must trust some sort of persistent ancient mythology. Such as, you know, living in the modern world and insisting that women cover up their hair because it makes the sky daddy mad if women's hair isn't covered. And so whatever faith system you're talking about, where you're going to get in trouble is with the fundamentalists. Imagine living in the modern world and insisting that you can't have zippers. Because, again, it'll make the sky daddy mad. But they were weird and creepy and inhospitable. And like I said, if they had been allowed to, they probably would have hauled me right out, had an Amish barn raising, and as Annette pointed out, tied me up in the middle of the barn, filled it with hay, and set fire to the barn. But it was... Bye, y'all. Have a safe trip now in your car. Hope you get... At least your mule's getting some relief. Maybe the other livestock, too. So those were my two little moments, because there are little moments everywhere, all the time. But, you know, you get right down to it. Those people didn't have that much, apart from nuance, didn't have that much different from, say, some fundamentalist mullah in Iran or some creepy Orthodox Jewish guy in Jerusalem. They all despise women, and they all rigidly enforce a brutal and damaging patriarchy. Funny that, huh? Now, we do have real news to go into on this 4th of July. But let me get started with some thank yous, or some gratitude at the very least. This is the moment when PayPal has chosen to update itself on my device. But I will say thank you for getting us started with fundraising. From the Friday on the Front Porch Challenge, that's thank you, Steve. I appreciate you so much. It is not turning into Prayer Meeting Wednesday, Lee, doggone it. But Lee says, now, since this is turning into Prayer Meeting Wednesday, I still like Mel Blanc's 2,000-year-old man explanation of the creation of religion. Phil was the leader. Lightning struck Phil and killed him. The people looked up and said, there's something bigger than Phil. You know, it probably wasn't the voltage. It was the amperage. So I've been told. Or not the wattage, but the voltage. I forget how that whole thing works. I personally think human language developed after lightning struck a cannabis plant. And Og and Mog and Nog stood around wondering at it and seeing fire for the first time. And along the way were breathing. And human speech developed in that instant where they began giggling and got hungry and start saying, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh my God. Which may have an interface with the beginnings of religion. As to the Amish beard, Lee in New York says there's a reason. A bearded man is married. Single men are clean-shaven. If a woman wants a relationship with a bearded man, she knows he is married. So they can't lie to her. No, baby, I'm not married. No. I'm just looking. I'm looking for a woman like you. Well, maybe that serves. Yeah, okay. That serves at least a tribal purpose. One would think that being humans, there would be some other way of manifesting it, like, oh, I don't know, a ring? Or maybe the culture could not be so obsessed with marriage. And, you know, some cultures have line marriages, clan marriages, polygamy, bigamy, you know, and You know what the Brigham Young said out in Utah. I got two wives, and it's mighty bigamy. Ha! But it's always a guy having multiple wives. It's never a wife having multiple husbands. Now, all y'all, get out of here. Go earn a living. Bring me my bonbons, damn it. Yeah, forgive me. I am a little bit tired. I haven't slept very well for the last couple of nights because, me and... It seems like the older you get, the harder it is to sleep in hotel beds. Thank you, Jude. I appreciate that. Steve in New York pointing out, when the far side mirrors reality, you have officially found yourself on the far side. There's reason to believe that my entire life may be a series of far side cartoons. It reminds me of the shortest poem that Robert Frost ever wrote. Forgive, O Lord, is the name of the poem. Forgive, O Lord, my little jokes on thee. And I'll forgive thy great big one on me. Jeremy in Vermont says, live, no, but you are one of the two I've heard live today. Only, not the only one, but apparently for Jeremy, one of two. Lee in New York with happy 4th of July greetings. Everyone knows John Hancock's signature. I'm thinking of the inability of Stephen T. Mnuchin, the first Secretary of the Treasury, unable to sign his name. P.S. Jacob Lew was able to practice. He signed his name on the currency. That shows Democrats insist that you learn. Republicans, on the other hand, accept ignorance. Oh, that's funny, and it's interesting you would mention that. Ralphs tells me, because we've got a story about Moms for Liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woo! Somebody called Moms for Liberty assholes with casseroles. There's our first cowbell of the evening of the program. Assholes with casseroles. Well, adding to that, I had a note from our pal Joy in Ann Arbor a couple of days ago that said, can we please make this a thing? It needs to be a thing. Going forward, every reference to Moms for Liberty should be to, wait for it, because this is good. This is, whatever you're drinking, go ahead and swallow it. If you're eating, chew, swallow. Give you a couple of seconds here. Because personally, when I opened the message and read it, I did a W.C. Fields spit take. The new name of Moms for Liberty is, and let me award the cowbell now to Joy in Ann Arbor, Klanned Karenhood. Yes, you heard that right. Klanned Karenhood. How damned appropriate. I love that. Joy, thank you. They will be Klanned Karenhood going forward. Because they're Nazis. Moms for Liberty or a bunch of fascists? I did not see and get coming. I did not see that coming. I did not see that coming, Nazi. And it was, how about that? On this day in history, as Ralphs points out, 4 years ago today, President Very Stable Genius told us how Americans took over the airports at York. And is that alongside the Battle of Bowling Green? The airports. Thank you, Ralphs. My poor little brain had almost forgotten that. We should never forget such monumental manifest stupidity. Oh, and Lee with a note says, sure, I told you this before. Years ago at charity walks, the line was long by the women's restroom. The men's room had no waiting. A few women decided to enter the men's room rather than waiting for forever. No one said anything, no comments, no reaction. The women did what they needed, left. Funny how that's possible. As to the Mennonite guy staring at me, Steve in New York points out, what you should have said, as my great-grandma once said, if you see something green, pick it off. Hi, Grandma. Hi, Steve's grandma. Yes, Og and Nog, Emilio. Emilio's saying, don't forget Boof and Queef. Well, that was the next generation. And Og was a righteous man. Righteous, dude. It, Darlene. My sister in seasonal affective disorder. Ah, the weather is clearing and the sunshine is coming out now that the goddamned holiday weekend's over. And I still see some strange colored clouds, Canadian wildfire smoke. Right? Beautiful, huh? Well, I hope you had a good weekend just the same. It was rainy and gray as we drove down to Tennistan. Basically, you go down I-77, which is also the West Virginia Turnpike, into Virginia, and at Withville, Virginia, you pick up I-81, which is a freaking racetrack, and you zoom along with the flow of traffic, and you go through places like Chilhowee. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. It might be Chilhowee. But it's spelled like, hey, don't be an asshole. Chill, Howie. Do we have a Howie in the Horn Family Community Congregation? And down toward Abingdon, which my wonderful daughter-in-law, upon reading the sign for the first time, said, is that Abingdon? Well, it wasn't before. But it will forever and anon be Abingdon now. Kind of the same way that, you know, the French palaces at V-E-R-S-A-I-L-L-E-S, Versailles. Well, they've got one of those in Kentucky, too. Only being Kentucky and everything, they pronounce it Versailles. My father, seeing it for the first time, traveling between West Virginia and Alabama, said, Versailles, and it became, and it, within our family, it became Versailles forevermore. Abingdon. But you get down to Bristol. We went a little south of that. And my granddaughters are going to have a little neighborhood that has children in it. That they can play with and grow up with. And it was sweet. Bittersweet. Because once the move is effected, I have a feeling we're going to miss something fierce. But birds have to leave the nest. Good ideas deserve repetition, Lee in New York says. From yesterday's electoralvote.com, other opponents of Moms for Liberty have taken to calling them Klan Karenhood. Assholes with casseroles. Klan Karenhood. The assholes with casseroles. Let's work it all together. Okay, so That's my little trip report. Yeah, we came back. My daughter-in-law came back with she and I came back today. She had been beside herself being away from her little girls, and they just lit up like Christmas to see her. And the June bug, well, she stands on her own now. She doesn't have to hold on to things. And there's a little, there are little Elmo videos. And when Elmo jumps up and down, the June bug jumps up and down and giggles and laughs and waves her hands in the air. It's just charming as can be. She's got a full head of hair now. And it's very curly. I have no idea where in her family she could have gotten all those curls. Yeah, if we're I guess if we're going to go down the list of places mispronounced in America, of course there is Dubois, Pennsylvania. Steve points out is Dubois. Then there's the little town in Alabama. Be kind of hard to screw this up, you would think, but then again, it's Alabama. A-R-A-B. Arab, of course. And right there at the confluence of the Tennessee River and the Mississippi, C-A-I-R-O in southern Illinois. Cairo? Of course not. Cairo. Or the little town in Iowa, named for a North African resistance fighter of the 19th century, Muhammad Al-Qadir. Yeah, the name of that town is Al-Qadir. Al-Qadir. Well, thank you, Scary Jerry. Scary Jerry says, Klan Karenhood. Oh, that was goated. Jerry said, I was leaving the house about an hour ago after having a low-key but fun long weekend, blah, blah, blah. This was an angry call I took, which would have turned into a really bad date. I got so much cool shit going on as I hit one of the circulating blunt as a friendly disagreement on what is the best cookout song. I wasn't going to leave my hood for shit. Robin was going to be on in about 35 minutes. Vegan food porn, 4th of July edition. Happy 4th of July, Horn! Assholes with casseroles, indeed. They need to be mocked relentlessly, these book banners and book burners and all these Nazis. But the problem is, and we can kind of roll a little bit of Moran Monday into Titanic Tuesday and do both. The problem is the multimillionaire for-profit media, which keeps treating Klan Karenhood, the assholes with casseroles, as if they are anything other than fascist assholes. I mean, they run around quoting Adolf Hitler, please. Can we agree that there is nothing, I mean nothing, there is nothing Adolf Hitler ever said that needs to be quoted? But some people, I suppose, just feel an abiding need to do exactly that, quote Adolf Hitler. And, oh, just a second, there's my son calling. Stand by. Okay, sorry about that. Before, you've heard it a million times, he pops into the studio. Well, there's no more of that. At least for now. Instead, he calls. But it was good to hear from him. I know he's okay. Anyway, the problem with Planned Parenthood, the assholes with casseroles, is the fact that the multimillionaire for-profit media keeps insisting on treating them with something like respect, which they do not deserve. They are not organic. They are an AstroTurf outfit. They are funded by right-wing billionaires. And they're scum. And so, over this past weekend, they had their first convention. And, of course, they had it in, where else? Philadelphia. They had it for 4 days. It wrapped up on Sunday. And this is one of those, the company you keep kind of moments. Because this group of modern-day Eva Browns, well, both Nitwit Nero and Ron Monkey Up DeClantis pandered to them, bowed and scraped and kowtowed to them. And so, too, did the Oath Keepers fascist militia. The Oath Keepers recently appeared before a pro-Confederate gang. Now, there's always, you know, in America, because capitalism, there is always some sort of a nexus with money and marketing. And in this case, it's the Marriott hotel chain. Because not only does the for-profit media bend over backwards to avoid pointing out that the assholes with casseroles, Planned Parenthood, are you know, fascists. Well, apparently, fascist money spends every bit as good as anybody else's. As far as Marriott is concerned. And Marriott, of course, is owned by, check me, Horn Ad Hoc Marriott Research Department. But isn't Marriott owned by some wealthy Mormon family? Yeah. So Marriott needs to hear from the decent people in the United States, telling them that it's really not good for their image to be hosting fascists. On Sunday, there were 6 arrests in Philadelphia. More Philadelphia news in a minute. And, gosh, some Fort Worth, Texas news. Hint, none of it's good. But there were 6 arrests on Sunday as activists joined hands and formed a traffic barricade outside the hotel. Police warned them to not do that 3 times and then came in and arrested them. If they'd been arrested in Atlanta or perhaps the state of South Australia, they'd probably be facing felony terrorism charges. The Philadelphia Inquirer also noted that a trans woman was arrested for waving a trans pride flag over a barricade around the hotel. The group behind some of the protests, God bless them for and their courage, was ACT UP. ACT UP is an activist group that sprang up in the midst of the AIDS HIV epidemic to raise hell in order to raise awareness of what that deadly disease was doing to Americans. Yes, Americans. Americans who, in many instances, happen to be gay. And so they stepped up against the assholes with casseroles, blocked traffic, and chanted, "Moms for Liberty, go home." The organizer was Aaron Botiford, and he told the Philadelphia Inquirer that ACT UP members are willing to escalate their tactics against the group, even though they were arrested. "We are willing to take things further than we have been. It's actually not on their terms. It's on our terms." And ACT UP has been extremely effective over the years. And it's good to see them on the front lines calling out these ugly fascist beasts, these assholes with casseroles. Inside the Marriott, someone got in and did some creative door tagging, putting tags on door handles in the hotel. "Agenda Pack welcomes you to the gayborhood. Hate has no place in Philly. Get Moms for Liberty out of our city." Another door hanger had the yellow and black diagonal stripes of a caution sign bearing the words, "Please disturb. Fascism in progress. Did you know a designated hate group is staying at this hotel? Check the facts on Moms for Liberty," with one of those QR codes that you can scan. Good on them. And as the article points out over at Jezebel, they've been in the news lately, Planned Parenthood, for their Hitler-quoting ways. But that's not enough to make Republican presidential candidates get away from them because, well, it's 2023, y'all. And fascists are the base of the Republican Party, period. End of sentence. The dumbest woman in the race for the presidency, that would be former South Carolina governor and former UN ambassador Nimrata Nikki Haley, absolutely refused to denounce Planned Parenthood. And she don't have a problem with him. You know, just like she didn't have a problem taking a phony phone call from what she thought was the president of Poland, but turned out to be the two dudes from the morning zoo crew at Moscow 98.2, the Vulgar Boatman. Yeah, remember, that's the one where they got her to talk about an imaginary island nation called Bonomo. And somehow or another, nobody ever brings that up. I don't fully understand why it is that the multimillionaire for-profit media refuses to bring up the stupidity of these right-wing asshats. Because that's part of informing the nation. The Fourth Estate has a duty when some politician or group thereof are entirely stupid of pointing out the fact that they are. The assholes with casseroles, and we've been talking about them for, I think the first time they entered my consciousness was when they managed to ban a book in, Dickinson County, Tennistan? Oh, there's Tennistan again. And it was a book for, like, preschoolers and kindergartners, and it was inappropriate! Because it had a watercolor painting of a pregnant male seahorse. Because in the seahorse world, the male seahorses, guys, right, bear the babies. Pretty sure they don't baby the bears, but don't quote me. And so they are they're a, call them the brown skirts for people like, oh, I just came up with it. I invented that one. Add that to the list, the brown skirts. They're culture war shock troops for Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, but they love them some Trump, too. Nitwit Nero talking to them said, don't mess with America's moms. Monkey Up DeKlantis called them Mama, beep, boop, beep, I am a recording, bears. And he said, you know, moms for liberty are doing what all women are supposed to do. And, you know, I guess being fascist. Monkey Up went on to say, the radical left, beep, bop, yes, even slandering moms for whoop, beep, liberty as a so clear called hate group. But moms for liberty is no barp, beep, hate group. You are joyful warriors. No, wait, that was Newton here.
You're joyful warriors and fierce patriots, the key political force for this 2024 cycle.
And generally speaking, they make mischief anywhere that there is a wingnut county or state government. Because that's how fascists operate. Fascists always do that until they are mercilessly and relentlessly crushed. Oh, back to the Marriott chain. Brother Deacon Asa says, well, back to the tennis stand trip. Maybe not burn you alive in a full-on barn raising, Robin, but they should have whooped your ass for not getting that Nash Vegas chicken, though. Brother Deacon, I mean, I realize you're up there, you know, in Canoodlia and everything, but Nash Vegas was a long way away from where I was. Tennessee is a, you know, it can take you a day to drive east, all the way from the easternmost part of Tennistan to the westernmost part of Tennistan. I've done it. And I was in the easternmost part of Tennistan. Oddly enough, one of the earliest, just being 4th of July and all, one of the earliest battles of the American Revolution took place near what is now Kingsport, Tennessee. I didn't get to read it, but when we were traveling to, and this is right up there with the Battle of Bowling Green, July 20th, 1776. And once again, it was a matter of obnoxious white people fighting indigenous people. It was called the Battle of Long Island Flats between encroaching settlers who were by dictate of the crown were not supposed to go past the Allegheny front, but did anyway. Long Island Flats, largest battle of the Revolutionary War within the boundaries of Tennessee. The Cherokee were mercilessly slaughtered. And, of course, only 16 days before, with the publication of the Declaration of Independence, that propaganda document, because it was, I'm not slurring the Declaration of Independence, but that propaganda document declared that the king was not protecting the colonists from the, quote, merciless Indian savages. So to prove that there was no protection, the white people went out and slaughtered some Indians. Because of course they did. And then as a result of the battle, the white people, mostly English, some Scots, went and murdered more indigenous people. Why not? I'm sure the Tennessee Historical Marker puts forward a much more biased account. Oh, as to the Marriott's, no, says Brother Deacon Asa, not anymore. Marriott is a publicly traded company. It was, however, started by one John Bishop Willard Marriott some 125 years ago. Fascist money aside, I can honestly say that Marriott puts out a phenomenal product. They do. And so, to that end, I think it would be beneficial to provide them with some customer feedback about how one feels about them hosting fascists. If you want fascist money, great. Take the fascist money, but don't expect anyone else's, because it goes back to that old German saying, if you have 9 normal people and 1 Nazi at the table, and none of the 9 speak up, you have 10 Nazis at the table. It's not complicated. Jeremy pointing out, subject line, natives. The whites couldn't have killed Indians. They didn't exist. Columbus never met one. He never made it here in the first place, or there. Right. Yeah. So the assholes with casseroles, the brown skirts. I'm proud of them. Screw it. I'm giving me a cowbell for that. That's for brown skirts. they get all mad about things that don't exist. Their breakout sessions at their Claiborne included protecting kids from gender ideology and getting flipped school boards to take action. And they spent a lot of their time barking and grunting and bleating and braying and hooting and howling and shrieking and screeching about how, because they're fast, these fascists spend more time thinking about trans people than trans people spend thinking about trans people. That they want to make sure that trans kids can't have any health care and thereby have a much more highly elevated chance of unaliving themselves. And they want to make sure that they have no basic rights. And they don't, and they are fully on board with don't say gay. Outside the doors of the meeting, a trans woman was waving a trans pride flag. That, by God, will get you arrested, however. Make no mistake about it. I said there was news about other news about Philly, and there is. It was a bloody day in Philadelphia. Because Second Amendment freedom. Right. A presumably lawful gun owner opened fire in Philly . Heartbreaking. He was wearing, the domestic terrorist was wearing a bulletproof vest because he wanted to make sure he could take a few hits and still keep slaughtering. Philly police have two people in custody. One of them is the suspected shooter. The cops found 3 firearms. Thanks to the Second Amendment, 5 people are now dead. 2 young boys were wounded as well. And then the shooter surrendered to police. And it was kind of a shooting spree because it happened over the course of several blocks in Philly. And I probably don't need to say this, but the mayor of Philadelphia pointed out that the lawful gun owner, that problem child of the law, the lawful gun owner had an AR-15 style firearm. It all happened in Southwest Philly Monday night, the 3rd of July. The 2 boys who were wounded were a toddler and a teenager. And, of course, the Philadelphia.com from NBC10 story includes the now ubiquitous and entirely disingenuous statement, this coming from the police commissioner of Philadelphia, Danielle Outlaw. Danielle Outlaw said, "We have absolutely no idea why this happened. This person decided to leave their home and target individuals." these things have got to be difficult for officials to address to the media and the like. No doubt about that. But when Commissioner Danielle Outlaw said, "We have no idea why this happened," well, Madam Commissioner, I have an idea why this happened. This happened because it's legal for American citizens to own almost the exact same kinds of weaponry that our military carries into war zones expressly for the purposes of slaughtering other human beings. Because the AR-style rifle is brutally effective at what it was designed for. It was not designed for ownership by lawful gun owners. This happened because a lawful gun owner was able to get his hands on one, and he's not screwed down real tight. If he was going to go somewhere and do this, why couldn't he have? Never mind. No sense adding the brown skirts, the assholes with casseroles, Klan Karenhood into this mix. It all started about 8:30 Monday evening at 56th and Chester in King's Essing. Cops responded to a report of gunfire in the area. And they found multiple gunshot victims. They took the necessary steps to get them taken to the hospital, but even as they were doing that, they got another call. More guns, more gunshots. And then they heard the shots at the 1800 block of Fraser Street. I don't know if Clarence or Todd are listening. They would probably be able to tell us a little bit about the area. Then the chase was on. As the police were chasing the lawful gun owner, he decided to squeeze off a few rounds at the cops. Around the 1600 block of Fraser Street, the cops kettled the lawful gun owner into an alley from which there was no escape save death, at which point the guy, not the guy, the lawful gun owner, surrendered to police because he didn't want to have the police do to him what he had just done to five other human beings and two boys. Grown human beings and two boys. And there was no further incident in arresting him. He had multiple rounds, multiple magazines filled with multiple rounds of ammunition, a bulletproof vest, had a handgun and an AR, and was carrying a police scanner with him. Philadelphia police have not told us who the guy is. He's a guy. He's a 40-year-old man. The cops also arrested someone who picked up a gun and fired at the shooter. Three of those dead are 20, 22, and 59-year-old men. They didn't ID the age of the fourth one thought to be between 15 and 21. And then later on, another man reported his 31-year-old son dead inside a home. There were shell casings. It was very likely the lawful gun owner. The lawful gun owner apparently squeezed off 50 rounds. Commissioner Outlaw, who has no idea why this happened, we already sorted that part out, said, as you can see, there are several scenes out here. We're canvassing the area to get as much as we can to identify witnesses, to identify where cameras are located, and do everything we can to figure out the why behind this happening. Start at the gun store where the lawful gun owner bought the lawful gun. No, let's dig farther back, shall we? Start at the National Rifle Association. How about that? Or maybe start in a muggy, humid, hot summer afternoon in 1787, when the white men, who in convention assembled to cobble together the Constitution, decided to expressly stand, some of them threw hissies and said, we ain't going to ratify this here Constitution less than it says that we can keep our guns so as we can kill them merciless Indian savages. No. And so it was the 29th mass killing in 2023. We now have our 30th. We'll get to that in a minute. The Associated Press maintains the list in partnership with Northeastern University. And that is the highest number of mass shootings in the United States on record. In Philadelphia, there have been 210 homicides so far in 2023. And we are not, let's see, 31, 39, 59, 60, 90, 120, 151, 181. There are 184 days so far gone in this year, 2023. 184 days, and we've had 210 murders in Philadelphia alone. This has also proven to be the deadliest year on record in Philadelphia. And of the nearly 930 shooting victims so far this year in Philadelphia, 11% of them, well, they were children. You know, the children that the pro-life party claims to love and adore. Oh, wait, they weren't fetuses. I'm sorry. Right. Oh, yeah. The pro-fetus party. Really? Asks Darlene in Connecticut. The cops allowed him to surrender? I'm going to take a shot. Sorry, too soon. At what his skin color is. Next, you'll be telling us the cops took him to Burger King. Maybe the cops learned their lesson with that one, because we haven't seen any more, and then we took him to Burger King's addendums. Did I just say addendums? Addenda. David, Mellow Moonlit Meadow. I apologize.
Addenda. Why did this happen? Stephen New York asks, well, exactly why does that matter? It shouldn't even be possible. As an aside, my partner in Canada called me to ask what the hell is going on down there. He's always been a big defender of the U.S. He told me that's getting harder and harder to do. Well, I don't disagree. But, Steve, to the extent that this would even be helpful, you can explain to your partner that this isn't a United States problem. This is, in fact, a Republican Party problem. An enlightened country would have solved this problem because it's not like trying to come up with Einstein's unified field theory. This isn't even as difficult as the Sunday New York Times crossword puzzle. This problem can be solved, could be solved, should be solved. Something north of 70% of the American people want this problem solved. And you know where I fall on this. It's easy enough. Repeal the Second Amendment. Trans says that Second Amendment should be repealed. I do. But to say that we repeal the Second Amendment is not to say that we get rid of the right to own firearms. I'm one of those weirdos who will point out that there is a need for those. Varmints, critters, things that, you know, kill your chickens or your cattle or your sheep or your goats or your pigs, what have you. I get it. And I get that some people want to engage in the so-called sport of hunting, which is otherwise defined as mostly men taking guns out into the countryside and killing living things that aren't armed to fight back. Sometimes they do, though, and I tend to root for them when they do. No, if the workings of a woman's reproductive system can be left up to state legislatures, which are, of course, made up of by a majority of people who will never have to worry about those things, then why can't we do the same with guns? It seems simple enough to me. If the Second Amendment were repealed tomorrow, the state legislature would call in Alabama would call and the governor, you know, hee-haw, meemaw, would call an emergency session of the legislature to pass a law stating that good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, homosexual Talibamians who are law-abiding citizens, you know, until they squeeze the trigger and they're not, are allowed to have guns in Alabama. Because the Second Amendment's about militias, not about private gun ownership. We've talked about this before. It doesn't say keep and own guns. It says keep and bear arms. Keep and bear arms. Keep within the term of art of 18th century English, as used by the likes of the slave owner James Madison, forms the core of what the old English common law refers to as a bailment. There's a bailor or a bailiff and a bailee. The person keeping the gun in that language is engaged as the bailor, or the bailee rather, the bailee, to the bailiff or bailor, who is permitting the bailee to keep it, usually for a specific purpose. Merry oldie English law is chock-a-block with bailments. And I'll bet you somewhere in his contracts class, our dear friend David, formerly of San Diego, now of Oregon, has been just up to his eyeballs in questions about bailments, because you'll see it in contracts class, you'll see it in property class, and those old men in their lace breeches and their high-heeled buckled shoes and their powdered wigs, you know, sat around, you know, picking the fleas out of each other's hair and worrying a lot about bailments. It's kind of like the fact that if you think you've bought yourself a grave plot in a cemetery, a lot of legal systems will tell you, no, you do not own that little plot of ground that's big enough to drop a casket 6 feet under. What you have in the way is not, you do not have fee simple ownership in that land. You have something in the way of a permanent easement. God, how did I get down this rabbit hole? But y'all, we are into the what would nominally be the third hour of the program. And we are 25, no, we're not, no, we're at zero. We're at zero on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. I realize I screwed this up by not being here yesterday, but it was impossible to get back. And even if I had left yesterday, we wouldn't have been back in time for airtime. And I was late getting to air this evening, but yeah. We have $300 to raise to knock down, if we could raise $300, it would be doubled by Chris in Germany and Ralps and our kind anonymous friend, so that we would, of that $1,300, we would knock down six of it and only be at seven. As I said, thus far, we're at zero. And I apologize for even mentioning it. Don't forget, Jeremy says, 160 years ago yesterday, the Battle of Gettysburg ended, which was a turning point in the Civil War, even though it raged on for another 2 years. It absolutely was. Our pal Jessica up in Minnesota was thinking a bit about Gettysburg. The South still thinks a lot about Gettysburg because, you know, if Longstreet hadn't dragged his heels, or if one of those Tar Heel numbnuts from North Carolina hadn't blown away Stonewall Jackson, well, they probably would have won at Gettysburg, and we would have been in Washington, D.C., and the good old days wouldn't be old no more. Well, thank you, David. I didn't mean to conjure you that way, but thank you. So we are not a goose egg now. Thank you so very much. What the frell, Ralp says. Come on, people. Yes. Thank you, Ralp. Thank you. Steve with a couple of remarks. 11% were children in Philadelphia. You're so biased. That means that 89% were not children. They're clearly disproportionately adults. Well, yes. So there. There are lies, damned lies, and statistics, don't you know? Repeal the Second Amendment? Okay, says Steve, Mr. and Mrs. Originalist and all the chops at sea. You don't want to repeal the Second Amendment? Get rid of our standing army. That's why we had the Second Amendment, because they had a real bad taste in their mouth about, the framers did, about standing armies. And thank you, Sean. Sean saying, Robin, please put this towards the challenge. I'm so happy you made it on air today. Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. And thank you so much, So we are now, we've only got $265 to go on Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. You know, Bruce was originally from Michigan, spent a great deal of his career working in Wisconsin. He was a railroad union man. And his beloved wife, Karen, was a Minnesotan. And so let me pull up since Jeremy mentioned Gettysburg. Let me go to Jessica's note. This was actually yesterday. No, they were fighting on July the 4th, 1863. It's 160 years ago that it ended. And, of course, July 4th, 1863 also saw the fall of Vicksburg after a brutal siege. And once the Confederate flag came down, they did not celebrate Independence Day for another 100 years or more in Vicksburg. But as to July the 3rd, Jessica writes, on this day in 1863, a group of Minnesota farm boys were encamped outside of a little town called Gettysburg, and in the midst of eating chow, a god-awful scream arose from a nearby field, and a mass of gray moved towards their position. Yes, Stephen, New York, you said all the shops at sea. I thought you meant that. I thought that was on purpose. I just checked. It says shops. I thought it was funny. A mass of gray moved towards their position. This was the infamous Pickett's Charge. Now, the farm boys of the 1st Minnesota Volunteers were outnumbered 6-1. And when all was said and done, they lost 215 of their original 262, compared with the 6,500 of the 12,500 Confederate traitors. I added the traitors part because they were. Needless to say, the Minnesota farm boys done good, and that was on top of charging Cemetery Ridge and holding the line the previous day. So, yeah, if anyone needs a Minnesota girl for anything, let me know. Today also marks the end of the Stonewall Riots in 1969, a long and brutal fight for queer rights that we're still fighting, sadly. And since I don't think anyone has matched my Stonewall as a riot challenge, I'll match my original five with $5 and add $5 for Brother Deacon Asa answering Chris's question about the music, which I also wondered about, and another $5 in honor of the boys of the 1st Minnesota. And the continued consternation they give the state of Virginia, who keeps lobbying the state of Minnesota to return the 28th Virginia battle flag. Oh, Minnesota, don't you dare! That is a prize of war. It's currently on display in the Minnesota History Center in St. Paul, and there it will remain, as every governor since 1960 has denied the request. Good! You know, y'all would still have your stupid flag, Virginia, if you hadn't committed treason and seceded from the Union, which caused your little country cousins to the West to secede from you so that we could be semper liberi. To quote Governor Jesse Ventura some years back, why? We won! So if my ciphering's correct, that's $20 toward the Capital Operating Fund, and if someone would like to match that, even if it's by smaller denominations, every little bit helps. I'd appreciate it. And like you, Robin, I don't very much feel like celebrating a day of freedom when mine have been reduced. And not to further pain Jude by saying this, but you're not the only one making escape plans just in case. Never. In my 46 years of living in the United States, except in my dystopian post-apocalyptic nightmares, did I ever think I would ever have to seriously consider fleeing. Land of the free, home of the brave, unless you're queer, then you can fuck right off. I have the day off tomorrow, which is today. Hi, Jessica. So I might participate in the front porch discussion, I don't know. Well, I said we might have one, but then I screwed everything up, so I guess there's not going to be a front porch. certainly jingle in if you'd like to. If you want to fire up Skype, Jessica, Robin, Kincaid Horn, you know how that works. I hope you and everyone else in the Horn family congregation has as pleasant a day as possible today. And a bit of an addendum. Now, in full disclosure, I should add that as someone who holds a worthless degree in history, I am shamefully underread on my Civil War history. And those in the audience who are better read on the Battle of Gettysburg can clarify these details. My quick read of accounts may be inaccurate, as those might be the casualties of the Cemetery Ridge assault, and the remaining 47 men helped repel Pickett's charge. And those could be total casualties from their 2 days of fighting. However, most materials I skimmed over for casualty statistics attributed the 82% casualties suffered by the Minnesota farm boys to Pickett's charge, although one or two others attribute them to the charge on Cemetery Ridge. Yeah, the Union defense of Cemetery Ridge. Regardless, it's damned impressive how well the 1st Minnesota performed at Gettysburg and helped turn the course of the war. I think that valiant effort deserves a cowbell, Robin.
I do, too.
And I don't know if this does, too, but the first thought I had when you mentioned the title of that country swing kind of song that plays between programs on the stream or when the programs drop is Town of 52 Bars was, oh, so any town in Wisconsin. Ooh, ooh. Town of 50. I've been to some of those towns, and Jessica, you're not wrong, honey. Town of 52. Oh, that's just so good. And along with the 1st Minnesota, also worth mentioning is the, what were they called? The Iron Hat Brigade out of Wisconsin, who were brutally effective. And I think particularly at Chickamauga, outside Chattanooga. And that was where Arthur MacArthur earned his fame, propelling the family of that name to further fame and glory. I think Arthur MacArthur was the father of Douglas MacArthur. And then there were the Michigan Union soldiers. I've been to Shiloh a number of times, down at Pittsburgh Landing, Tennessee. There are two parts of Tennessee, east and west, that bear the name Pittsburgh. One is Pittsburgh Landing, which is referred to also as the Shiloh Battlefield, and the other is South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. I bet Yinz didn't know you had a Pittsburgh in Tennessee, did you, Yinzers? But they don't spell it the same way. There's no H in DeBerg. Thank you, David, in New Mexico. Thank you so much. We are now down to $255 to go to meet Bruce and Karen's Memorial Challenge. Thank you, David. Thank you so much. Maybe we could talk it out. As to the Philly shooting, Clarence writes in, because I done conjured Clarence. Robin, the last job I had before I returned to over-the-road truck driving was in that neighborhood. 10 years ago, I was a residential manager of a recovery house named Straight Inc. The shooting started one city block from my former place of employment. King's Essing is a low middle-income community. Crime is a problem. Narcotics use and sales are rampant. So something like that did not surprise me. I got my theory about why the police didn't use the go-to I was fearing for my life. I do not know the ethnicity of the shooter, but it's a good bet that all the people who got shot were black. If there ever was a time to shoot, it's when the shooter had a weapon, vest, and ammo. Just saying. But they praised the commissioner and the mayor praised the police for their restraint in not shooting the lawful gun owner, who by that time had become an unlawful gun owner. Jesse Ventura, says Stephen New York. Why? We won. I love that. Is that cowbell worthy? Because that's certainly go fuck yourself funny. I wasn't a big fan of Jesse Ventura. But in that case, I cannot help but agree. And that should probably be the repeated answer of every Minnesota governor until the sun burns out. Hey, y'all, over there in the Old Dominion there, it's not y'all's flag anymore. We took it from you. We captured it. It is spoils of war. Okay? Good. You have a Minnesota nice day now. Bye. Your sons of terrorists. Your sons of traitors. Bye now. Of course, in 2023 America, it is nothing to see, sadly. And by the way, it was Bruce who first coined the term the devil's diaper to describe the Confederate battle flag. And in point of fact, between Bristol, Tennessee, and where my son and daughter-in-law and grandchildren are going to take up residence, up on a hill on what probably has to be at least a 100-foot-tall flagpole, flaps the devil's diaper to this day. And every time I see it, I think, you know, somebody really needs to go up there and do something patriotic and take down that horrid thing and burn it to a cinder. And all if it was somebody from a particular community, maybe run up a rainbow flag. But the American flag would do. And as we were toddling around down the back roads toward Kingsport, there it was, a shanty. Tumble-down place. They had them a flagpole in front yard. And they had the American flag flying, old stars and stripes. Now, under ordinary circumstances, you would expect the next flag flying under that to be the flag of the volunteer state, which, by the way, is kind of an homage to the Confederate flag. Red field, blue circle, three white stars, and a white and a blue bar, get it? Stars and bars on the trailing edge of the flag. Heritage, not height. Stephen New York asks, is the Battle of Seminary Ridge the same thing as Pickett's Charge? As I recall, Pickett's troops launched from Seminary Ridge. No, they launched towards Seminary Ridge. There's two ridges, Cemetery Ridge and Seminary Ridge at Gettysburg. The second day of fighting was around Cemetery Ridge and the Devil's Den, boulder-strewn area, because it's in the area that was covered thousands of years ago by the glaciation of the Ice Age. And there's just boulders all over the place from where they were pushed about by the massive ice sheets. And in fact, if you're in Wisconsin, there's an area in the more or less southern and western part of the state called the Driftless, which is an absolutely beautiful area of Wisconsin, where there are those self-same boulders, just sort of looks like, you know, God was bowling or something, you know, when he wasn't obsessing over women's hair. But I suspect if I were to inquire of the loveliest geologist I know, Miss Terry, she might tell me that they were, yes, indeed, part of the same event. Maybe they're the same kind of rock, for all I know. The land of a thousand lakes in Minnesota, Ice Age, gouged them out. Same for the lakes in Wisconsin. A bit of a digression, but by the time the decimated ranks of George Pickett's cohort finally reached the top of Seminary Ridge. The Union soldiers were shooting them like traitorous fish in a barrel, and they were chanting something. They were chanting, Fredericksburg, Fredericksburg, Fredericksburg. Because the situation had been reversed at the Battle of Fredericksburg as the Union tried to claw its way up what was called Mary's Heights and were absolutely slaughtered by the traitors. I don't think we should even call them the rebels anymore. They weren't. No, they were traitors. By the way, Micah adding, oh yeah, and the lakes of Michigan, including the Great Lakes, all gouged out by the glaciers. There's a reason we have winter water wonderland license plates in Michigan. Absolutely true. Steve. Devil's Den. Steve says, glacier? You meant the flood, right? Yes. Noah just bobbed right past it, I'm sure. And when the waters receded, he probably showed the angel Moron Eye where to bury the golden plates that were written in Reformed Egyptian. Randy Radar pointing out, Pickett's charge apparently wasn't an electric fence, but it probably was white. Well, Randy, cowbell for you. That was good. It was a white picket. Oh, dear. Yes, and George Pickett was a veritable doll of a man. He oiled his locks before he went into battle so that he would have descending, oily, pretty curls. You know, just like the Southern Belles wore. It's okay, George. You're valid. We see you. Kevin in Colorado Springs, thank you. Thank you so much. We're down to $205 to go. Thank you so much. That's a huge help. Thank you, Kevin. We all do so appreciate it. So we got about a half an hour to make maybe to pull together $205. Jude with a note said, adding a slight shift, a piece of verse from Rumi, favorite of Jude's and of mine, set your life on fire. Seek those who fan your flames. Jude noting, as you walk a path, Robin, that requires discipline of thought and action, always hear, as I may appear silent, yet closer than one can envision. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so much. I love that line. Set your life on fire. Seek those who fan your flames. Jude added, Clarence, if I heard correctly, in his revealing work with those who are in recovery, I travel with many at my beloved work that are too. I'm moved at their resilience and wide openness to the moment at hand, as healing on all levels requires being accepted and loved. Firstly, embracing within themselves, learning about personal forgiveness, and then the acute awareness of the seeds of love reside within. When I listen to Clarence's thoughts, Todd seems to visit. Wink. Yeah. Clarence and Todd are our official Philadelphia experts. I wonder, too bad somebody, well, it happened Monday night, but too bad somebody couldn't have asked the assholes with casseroles, you know, the brown skirts, Klanned Karenhood, what they thought about the lawful gun owner who murdered 5 people in Philadelphia and wounded 2 boys. 5 adults and 2 boys. I don't know why I'm having such a hard time characterizing that. A toddler and a teenager. And one of the other dead may have also been a teenager. Because the rite of pasty-faced, doughy, mostly pasty, mostly pasty-faced, mostly doughy, mostly white men to have weapons of war is more important than a toddler not growing up with a bullet hole in him. Jesus. Yeah. Someone is on the stress line. Let's find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hi.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm glad you found me.
I did find you. I didn't forget
fantastic.
You. I was just trying to get through some
things. I know. It's hard because it runs out and you got a lot of things. You're jiggling dishes and balls and wait, no.
Sticks on plates and
you're spinning
chainsaws.
Dishes. You're right. Yeah. Spinning plates, right. Yeah, and you bring a hell of a lot of dishes, Robin.
I wish more of them were tasty.
Yeah. I wouldn't bet. I'm cut up to May. I was just listening that I missed the first morning because my mom just died and I wasn't sure I could make it. And then I had my stroke and then two weeks out, there was no way I could get there. And then you couldn't plan me going. I really didn't want to go, but so yeah, it was a year anniversary of that. I got a bunch of notes because I had to write it down because I'm supposed to scatterbrain. I love talking to you, Robin. I appreciate you being there for us. And if we can keep Robin on the air, please get a couple bucks. Please give. And not for just Robin, for the rest of us that she helps keep us sane. At least. Todd, where's Todd been? I know his schedule changed, but I haven't heard from him. Like, great. And Brother Todd, I didn't want to go without saying that. How important this family is to us. And as far as our family goes, it expanded with, my daughter moved in with me and she overhears our conversation. So now she's a family member. And she just turned 28 yesterday.
Happy birthday.
I'm going to give $30 for her birthday. Yeah, no, she's a total left winger. Like, I'm so proud. I couldn't be prouder. Like, you know, it's kind of a complete asshole, right? Because, you know, whatever. Past is the past. But so I give $30 to whatever challenges are going. Oh, it's the,
okay. Well, that will get us down to $175 to go. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Thank you so much. Do you want to steer this conversation somewhere else? I'm kind of scatterbrained. I mean, I feel like when the silence, like the silence in my head makes it worse. That doesn't make any sense. Does it? Let's talk about Steve in New York and his latest obsession with the majority part. And he's totally right, but I think he approached it wrong. And I think that as a conversation for me, we don't talk about... Well, Steve's a lawyer, right? So he thinks like a lawyer, and you're not a lawyer, but you think like a lawyer. And some of us are like, wow, gee, if we're so despondent, let's hope upon hope that something happens. Like, maybe let's test it, because we've already tested the Constitution, didn't they, on January 6th? Or before then, with the inauguration of W, with the Florida putsch. Is that right? Again, I'm not a lawyer, and you don't really think like that. But maybe you can flesh that out some.
Possibly, yeah.
Isn't it all related? It's to me, it's like the whole Hillary Clinton is the vast right-wing conspiracy. Well, there is, because it's proved conspiracy in a court of law that, you know, obviously not, but, you know, a wink and a nod here, and, you know what they're saying? They don't talk like any good mobster wouldn't say it out loud like fucking dummy Trump did.
No, you're right. Hey, Ken, I just found out something. And it's not good. And and I don't want to dump it on you. I'm going to share it with everyone.
Okay, sure.
But you know, I think it would probably be best if you're not on air when I do this, because it's going to be hard enough for me.
Okay. Oh God, I'm going to cry. So I'll talk to you later soon.
Okay,
love
Ken.
You, Robert.
Bye. There's no good way to say it. Our dear friend. Beloved friend, Scott in San Diego, has died. I've been worrying about him, and I just saw a post. I missed somehow. I guess this is his sister. And it's from back middle, right before the middle of last month. It is with a heavy heart that we share the news that our brother, uncle, cousin, and friend, Scott Marinoff, has suddenly passed away. Words cannot describe all that Scott was. He was a unique fellow. A long-winded guy full of interesting information and witty humor. His interests, his knowledge, and memories were vast, and he had such a way with words. One thing you could always count on from Scott was an interesting obituary post memorializing an obscure celebrity from the past or a dear friend. One might say it was a favorite pastime of his. So in honor of Scott, we encourage you to please share your thoughts and memories. Scott is survived by siblings Marty Marinoff, Martha Marinoff, Gagnon, George Marinoff, nieces Natasha Marinoff, Ryder, and Marissa Marinoff, Sweeney, and nephews Christopher Marinoff, Rook Akasha, a.k.a. Ronnie Podlaski, Mark Podlaski, Nick Marinoff, and Tyler Marinoff.
So, I never thought him long-winded. I thought him erudite. Beautiful soul. Hilarious. So if there's some sort of an afterlife, I suppose he's up there. Some or somewhere. And regaling God. You there? It's me, Robin. But I like the idea of an afterlife where Mr. Stress and Scott from San Diego are both lost in conversation. And laughing so hard that they can scarcely get the next word out. Monkey working a math problem. The Hunter Biden song. Quoting Red Fox, if you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. His encyclopedic knowledge of the JFK assassination and of Watergate. How happy he was when I put that picture up last March when I was in D.C. having a burger at Ollie's Trolleys. And trying to sort out where Art's Magic Shop was, or was it Al's? On the corner of, I'm not sure which, in Pennsylvania. Maybe 12th in Pennsylvania? It's an office tower now. And I hope Scott was welcomed by his aunties. Those magnificent women. She sitting in her chair with her, was it Ham's beer? And her cigarettes, watching wrestling on TV. Knock the hell out of him! Kill him! I'm devastated. Darlene in Connecticut wrote, oh my God, Scott's left us. No, no. I can't believe it. No, he needed to call in one more time. Yeah, he did. But he did call in one more time. I'm not sure when the last phone call was. But it can't have been too much longer before he shuffled off this mortal coil to that bourne from which no man returns, the undiscovered country. Oh, God. Ralph says, oh no, hugs. Yeah. I know. Darlene says, this is heartbreaking. George in Coarse Gold. Have a show on me in Scott's memory. Rest in peace, Brother Scott. Oh, Lord, yes, and flights of angels sing thee to thy rest. Huh.
This is how you know that this is a family. Because it doesn't hurt this bad otherwise. Funky and Chirps were waiting for him. If there was, if there's any kind of deity, please let it have been painless, quick. I know he wasn't feeling good. I'm sorry to dump all this on y'all, but I've been worrying about him, and I just... And I was talking to Ken, and I went, oh, no. No, no, no. Such a beautiful man. Someone's on the stress line. Let me find out who. Hey, welcome to the program.
I know that there's many listening right now, but I wanted to be present with you in your grief.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. I had sent out on the last couple of days, I have 9 members from the community that email and text and talk, and none of them had any contact information to be able to give me, but it was wonderful to have each one of them respond to that. And, you know, I had shared with you that we lost that young fellow that was 24 here a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And then a month before that, we lost a biker on a trail that rendered him quadriplegic from my company. And I had talked with a few that I was close with, and I said, you know, in hospice, they always seem to lead in threes. So when you were talking with Ken, Scott came very present because of your stillness, that there was some kind of transition that went on. And I can't ease your grief because your grief is essential, because out of grief, that's where we honor people. When justice was killed in that accident a couple weeks ago after our retreat. All day, that was on Thursday, we found out. All day Friday, I kept, Robin, no kidding, I kept hearing him say, Jude, Jude, went on all day long. And then Saturday came, and it was Jude, Jude. And that transition, you know, became kind of apparent. And if I could offer you anything, it's just my enfolding love and understanding of how it's so hard to lose people, you know, physically. But there is another reality that goes on. But it takes a lot of work to be able to reach that place. And the two of you had such engaging, fun interchanges. You know, sometimes you go on the whole program with each other. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the one of the things about Scott, Jude. For all the things that his niece said he was, but he was also a damn fine broadcaster. He knew how to engage listeners. And, you know, the fun we had talking about, you know, doing radio.
Mm-hmm.
And the times that we just lost it listening to that Casey Kasem clip, and the part that Scott got to Scott most was when Casey Kasem said, ponderous, man, ponderous. It's ponderous.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been at Cincinnati, Kansas City. I mean, he was a journeyman. He was a pro.
And he seemed, you know, I never really, you know, I had asked one time to be able to engage with him through email, and then, you know, life has its own course. But one of the things, because he used to call in a lot, and we were both engaged, and then people from the community would write in. But there was always this sense of ease about who he was and the delight that he would take engaging with you. And all of that, you know, I view taking moments like that and just holding them in just this well of extraordinary preciousness, that we've had the opportunity to cross paths with people. Maybe some of them we'll never meet, but Yeah, so I feel for, you know, I feel for, you know, a member of the community that we won't hear from. But I also adhere to the gifts that are given that sustain us and help us to remember, you know, that there are really good people in the world, and they will be continue to be produced, you know, because it, that's just how life has it. And, I love you very much, Robin.
I love you, Jude. Thank you. I just checked June 13th. June 13th was a Tuesday.
And that was the last time he connected?
No, that was the day he passed.
Oh, it was in June 13th. Oh, June 13th. And what day was that, do you know?
It was a Tuesday.
Interesting, because that was our retreat in Seattle. And that was the night that we lost that young man. Yeah. Oh. Well, if you have any way connecting with anyone in his family, please send on the deepest of tenderness and compassion from women standing.
I will. I will.
And how will you take care of yourself? Will you kind of end the program and then just weep a little bit more? I mean, do you, not anticipatory, but
no, I'm already bawling.
Yeah. But, you know, weeping is...
I will do some more.
Well, you won't be alone. You have others that, like I had shared with Jessica, even though we're from a distance.
People are responding. I just had a note from... Theo in Oregon. Theo said, just heard the news about Scott in San Diego. My deepest condolences to you and to Scott's family, biological or chosen. His calls with you were always literate, entertaining, informative, and so often delightfully funny, and it was great to hear the lift in your voice and spirits when he checked in. That's a big empty place in the fabric of the Horn family. Requiescat in pace, mate. Yeah.
Beautifully put. Well, honey, I'm going to let you go because maybe someone else would like to call in, but I just, like I said, I wanted to be present with you at this moment.
Thank you, Jude. I appreciate it. You're a dear and sweet and kind and loving soul, and I'm grateful for you. More than
all right,
you know.
All right, I'll get you. Take care, honey.
You take care. Bye, Jude. Lee in New York says, do not apologize for your heartfelt reaction to the sad news of Scott. One good Jewish tradition is sitting shiva. I know about that. I've done that. It is an opportunity for the living to support those grieving. We need to share stories. We need to support each other. The most common honorific is of blessed memory. Zichrono Vracha. I'm sure I'm doing that no justice whatsoever. Or... may his or her memory be for a blessing. Zichrona Livracha. That's the masculine and feminine version. I learned that phrase a long time ago, when in fact I was sitting shiva with some family. Some friends, family friends. And the very first time I heard, may his memory be for a blessing, I thought that was just so perfect. Because that is as it should be. And it is a continuing gift of the life that was lived. And I personally believe if there is anything like an eternity, it exists in the ability of other people to continue the memory of the one departed, and particularly of happiness and of joy. And by God, Scott was a wellspring of all of that. I'm devastated. If anybody does want to call in, I can cope now. I just didn't, I particularly did not want anyone on air when I shared the, with me when I shared the information, because it's just so, so damn sad. Brother DeConasa says, don't forget his pet name for Scott Walker, the former governor of Wisconsin, Princess Tiny Meat. Oh, God. Scott collected a lot of cowbells over the years. This program's been on air. I've been on air again. I've been in radio again for 20 years this year. And I have a hard time remembering a horn that didn't have Scott Marinoff as a part of it. And honestly, there were some nights that the news was just so bad that hearing his voice on the other end of the line saved me. Literally saved me, because somehow or another, we would find a way to laugh. Early on, I called him the horn resident optimist, and out of that grew my own self-appellation of little ray of fucking sunshine. Because every time it seemed like every time I got all little ray of sunshine, Scott was there. And so now I'll just kind of have to conjure him out of my own heart and my own mind, and so will the rest of us. And if you find yourself in a place where, I guess this is some sort of an impromptu eulogy, but if you find yourself in a place where it's just shit, just conjure Scott's voice. Saying, it was like a monkey working on a math problem. Got his little visor on, a little arm garters, a little pencil touching it to his tongue. I carry the 12. Princess Tiny Meat. Oh, Jesus. The demented orange circus peanut. Cooking dinner with the Klan as a high school journalism student. What a guy. And a survivor, by the way, a survivor. From the moment we knew him, he was already a survivor. Because he had survived a brain aneurysm and come through it. And he was so frustrated that he got the one case of Senate Navy bean soup and he could never get it again. Damn it. I know, Ken. Ken says, oh no, I'm broken. Yeah. And Darlene added, Scott's passing is very death of Ivan Ilyich. All from a fall. And he wasn't feeling great, and in later phone calls, he would call in and say, I'm not feeling so good. And we'd take off, as we always did, into conversation, and by the end of the program, by the end of the call, he'd say, you know what? I feel so much better. And I'd reply, good. I wanted to be that way. He loved his pipe, but he kicked his cigarette habit and never went back to it. The Horn historian and archivist is, of course, Brother Deacon Asa. He started calling into the program all the way back in 2015. Was it that late in? I could have sworn it was earlier. But I guess that fits. I'm so grateful for you, Asa, and to you. I appreciate you. Because it's all just a jumble. It's all just a mishmash in my mind. And an anonymous internet friend said, I'm doing a have a show on me, too. So lo and behold, from the great beyond, Scott Marinoff. Has helped us knock out June's deficit. By all but 400 bucks. And that blows my mind. And, he was a bit of a mystic too. And he was very much a be here now kind of guy. On May the 28th, 8 years ago, and he reposted it on May the 28th, he posted a picture of a slice of bread that said, if two people on opposite sides of the world each drop a piece of bread, the earth briefly becomes a sandwich. And that's peak Scott. On June the 1st, he posted, my mom and Marilyn Monroe were both born on June 1st, 1926. They would have turned 97 today. Thinking of you today, June Cecilia and Norma Jean. Wow. He loved Bob and Ray. And we will miss his TV viewing tips. Sometimes I wish we had a better archive of this program, and that's entirely on me. I'd love to just have a bunch of just the, if it was even possible to do, it would be beautiful just to run a few hours of Scott that his memory might be for a blessing. So I guess I'm going to go and take some time and just try to think his spirit. Gone 3 weeks to the day today. I was going to do the whole 4th of July shtick. Not shtick, but, you know, a sort of realistic vision of what the 4th of July was all about. Not the hyper-patriotic pablum, but the reality of who those rich white men were. That would have been a conversation he would have absolutely reveled in. Having been at this for 20 years now, I've received these notifications from time to time. I think back to Dear Maura, who didn't call in very often because her lungs had been ruined because she was working in Lower Manhattan on September the 11th, 2001. Thank God she loved the program and we loved her. And Mr. Stress. And others that I may not even know of. Because the relationship that this broadcast family community congregation has is in some ways a very private one. And people may not necessarily know how much we mean to each other. But Lord, we do mean family to each other, chosen family. Gertrude Stein said, friends are the family you pick for yourself. And I am so, so very glad that Scott Marinoff chose us. So very glad. So thanks, everybody. This would have been devastating in any iteration of this program. And I'm glad we well, there was no way I could hold it over to the next show or whatever. And Brother Deacon Asa notes, Scott was most definitely a mystic. In private conversations, and he said it on air too, he'd tell us that his professional psychic told him he'd live to be 89. He said that on air. He was only 68. God, I've been missing him since worrying, missing. And the fact that his voice is now stilled in all but our memories. Well, that's cause enough for bereavement. Darlene said Scott was the horn optimist. Even so, he did get frustrated from time to time with the political scene, and he felt it deeply, so we find out he's truly free on Independence Day. Yeah. Thank you, Darlene. God, I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss him so much. Well, y'all, thank you. I know I was late, and I apologize for my tardiness and for missing yesterday. Hope y'all had a good weekend. Thank you to all of you who support the program, who are members of this family, this community, this congregation. If you ever wonder if it matters that you're here, let me take a moment to tell you that what I do at the end of the program when I say that I thank each and every one of you for sharing your precious, finite, time engaging in this conversation. I mean that from the very bottom of my most essential being. You are all a blessing and a source of joy and comfort. And I appreciate you. I so do. Bernadette says, my condolences to Scott's family and his many friends that he probably never knew he had through using his voice and incredible knowledge via radio. You have so many shows which included his participation, a virtual library of Scott quips and wit. The pain you experienced because you didn't catch the posting earlier was quite evident. Please don't hold that against yourself. You're quite the busy lady. The end of the movie Powder is the way I like to think of death, of a life we get to experience briefly in our encounters with one another. We are energy only waiting to be recreated at a moment's notice. We will all still feel his presence because he was here. I love you. Love you too, Bernadette. Love you too. And I love you all. If I don't say that often enough, I apologize, because I should. Brother Deacon Asa. Oh, I think he's channeling Scott. You think we should find the psychic and get a refund for Scott? I think Scott would want that. I think he would. I'm going to blame that last sneezing fit on Scott. Oh, there's a lot going on down here. Hot dogs. Balloons for the kids. Pony rides. Thank you, Jessica. Cue me doing the pained Darth Vader-esque, no! I'm sorry, Robin. Thank you, Jessica. My condolences to you, Scott's family, and the entire Horn family congregation. So I'm going to knock off. And this time through, I'm not going to do all the credits. Although I do appreciate you all so very much. And while Gina, it's all for you, Scott, this outpouring of love and grief on all of our behalf is all for you.